I have to admit, this is a topic that I love. And it's something that I've studied since I was very young and learned, really got interested in as a young teenager from my grandmother, who, when she would come to visit, I would literally sit on the floor at her knee, like the saying says, and she would talk about the scriptures and about the gospel and about all the different parts. But one of the things she talked about were the prophecies. And she knew the gospel. She knew the scriptures and the teachings of the prophets. And she'd tell me to go get this book, and she'd flip to it, and she could go right to the page. She had this amazing memory. Probably the smartest, literally, smartest person I ever knew. Never went to college, but was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But I learned that thirst from her, and I've had a strong feeling all my life to study this, and so I have. And I enjoy trying to share this kind of information and talk about it. As my parents or my brother Russ or Kay can tell you, from the time we were young, we've talked about everything, and this was one of the topics that we've done. Coming to Ephraim, when Jeannie asked me, was not a hard decision. I'm from here. I was born in Ephraim. And my parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents are from Ephraim. They settled the town in 1842. Is that when Niels and Maren came here? Not 49, 42, I'm sorry, 1852. Yeah, it wasn't 49, 52. They came in 52. That's when Ephraim was established, I think, it was in 52. I got the wrong year there, sorry. It was 1852, and so the family's been here a long time, and I have feelings for Ephraim. I enjoy coming here. It's never a hardship, and I do not charge for this. Okay? So there's no need for that, and I appreciate the thoughtfulness. I really do. Kay did the same thing. But I just do it because I like it. I always feel bad about taking money for doing something the Lord shared with me. It's like when you're a bishop, you don't get paid for meeting. And sharing the gospel is not something you take money for. We live in an exciting time. If you have to pick a time to be alive, if I could pick one and look out throughout the history of the world, the two biggest picks would have been probably the time of Christ's first birth or his second birth. And knowing me, if I had any say in this, I'd pick this one. Because this really is an era in the history of the world when the events of the last 6,000 years are coming together. We are seeing what the prophets have hoped for and waited for since the time of Adam. Before he died, he called his righteous posterity together at the Valley of Adam on Diamond there north of Independence in northern Missouri, and he blessed them. And then he prophesied the history of the world, told them what was going to happen. He had seen it. And he was not the only one. We know as you go through the scriptures, there were a bunch of prophets who were shown the history of the world from the beginning to the end. To our Heavenly Father, He knows everything. He doesn't live in time the way we do, where we're looking at the past and looking at the future, wondering what's going to happen. He knows it all. He knows how this ends. And He's shown them. Moroni in the Book of Mormon says, I've seen you. And then he talks to us as though we're present, even speaking in the present tense, and warns us about some things that are important. So we live in a time that they've all looked forward to. Many of them were very discouraged with their own eras. People like an Isaiah or a Jeremiah who was thrown into prison over and over and over, and Isaiah was cut to death probably by his own son-in-law, is what they believe. Manasseh, King Manasseh, who didn't like him, but he married his daughter. And so they, things like that. For them, they knew that their era, Peter, James, and John, their era the same. They knew that there would be apostasy. But they looked to a time when there would be a restoration of all things that the Scriptures talk about, and things would be fixed. It would be made right. This is that time. And we're alive when we're going to see a huge resolution take place in the flow of history that's been going on for so long. It's a time when Satan is more effective and evil than he's ever been. Not that he was ever nice. But he's really good at it now. He's had all 6,000 years to practice. And he's very effective, better than ever, at promoting wickedness. And we're seeing that all around us. But at the same time, we have living prophets and apostles. We have a prophet today and apostles that hold the priesthood keys to direct and receive revelation on the earth to bring down the power of heaven and organize a Zion society. Do you realize how rare that is? In the history of the world, most people felt lucky if they had one prophet. Most never had any. They had to wait or read somebody else's writings. We've got 15. What a blessing. And that it's neat. And we live in that time. So I think maybe I picked this time. Now, I don't know if I did. I'd like to think I did. Nevertheless, we now live in the time that people have been looking forward to with excitement. But it's also a difficult time. If you read the prophecies, they're very plain as they describe the difficulties that are going to take place. And a lot of people get a little bit doomsday-ish about it. We don't want to be doomsday-ish. And I've mentioned before that people tend to fall into one of three categories. They fall into either the doomsday group to say, oh, it's going to be all horrible. I've got to hide away up in the mountains and take my guns and my food, and I'm going to shoot anyone that comes up there. And there's people doing that. That's not the way to be. The other group is at the other extreme. They're the head in the sand group. That's what I call them. And they're the ones that say, all is well in Zion, like it says in 2 Nephi 28, where Nephi is describing and explaining the writings of Isaiah. And these are the people that say, oh, it's not that bad. Everything's going to be all right. We're just going to sort of slide into the millennium, and there won't be any problems. And they're going to be totally caught off guard when this really hits, because they haven't prepared the way they're supposed to. In the middle is where we should be. And this group is the ones who realize, yes, it is going to be difficult for a while. How difficult? It's going to be really bad. And when I say really bad, imagine how bad you think it could be in your mind. It'll be worse. It's not going to be good. The Lord says He's going to make a complete end of all nations. And we're going to talk tonight as we go through this in more detail, what that entails and all the stuff that's going to be involved with that. That's not pleasant. In the history of any group, when you come up against that kind of change, that's hard. So is it going to be hard for a while? Yes. Does it last? No. It will end. Along with it being bad, good things are happening too. We live in a time when the prophecies say, and many of these wonderful prophecies about the last days have already been fulfilled. They tell us that the church is going to be restored. And that has happened. And along with that comes the priesthood. That also has happened. We are also told that before that, a great Gentile nation would be set up where these truths could be brought back. One of the great prophecies was that this nation would have to come, and we were told in the Book of Mormon that it would be become a very powerful nation, a very wealthy nation. You look back in the early 1800s, at the time when Joseph Smith and his family and the nation was just growing, when they were living, the United States wasn't that. We were third world, maybe second world at best. We were not a big nation, not like the prophecy said. But that has been fulfilled. We have since become what they said it would be. This was specifically guided by the Lord to create an environment where the church could be restored. And before that, you had the Reformation. You had wonderful men and women who sacrificed. Many gave their lives so they could break away from the oppressive hand of the Catholic Church at the time and the kings that were around that were crushing anyone that disagreed with them. And they opened up the way so that what we have could be possible in 1820 and 1830 when the church is officially organized. Of course, before that, the Book of Mormon is brought to pass and so on. So we see these things that they have happened. It was also prophesied that this church would grow and that there would be a great missionary work. And that's happening now. This is not done. The Lord said that the gospel has to be taken to every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. He's making a point. It's everywhere. And the reason He mentions kindreds, tongues, and people is it goes beyond political boundaries. It's to reach all the peoples of the earth. These are the children of our Heavenly Father. And He wants them all to be offered this opportunity. At this point, we're still struggling to get in a lot of nations. That's going to change. And after Armageddon, which, by the way, when Christ comes down, we're going to talk about that later, Christ comes down on the Mount of Olives and wipes out the army that's there, except for a sixth that runs away. That's not the second coming. After Armageddon, if you go and read in the Doctrine and Covenants, particularly section 45 makes this a little clear in some places, but if you read in the Scriptures, the prophecies say that after Armageddon, a huge missionary effort takes place that goes to the heathen nations. And when they use that word, they didn't mean the word necessarily in a derogatory way. They were defining nations. Gentile nations were particular nations. Heathen nations were particular nations. They meant groups by that. They're probably thinking of people that we would call Middle Eastern countries and China and places like that. We're going to get into those countries. Right now, there's prohibitions in a lot of those countries. And, you know, that's okay. The church obeys the laws of these lands. And my parents went on a mission for a couple of years to Israel. They had a prohibition again. They were missionaries. But no proselyting allowed. And they honored that provision. Someday, all those restrictions will be removed. And we're going to be in all these countries. some of these wars that take place are going to actually open those places up. So we see that. It was also prophesied that this Gentile nation that would rise up would then become very wealthy. I'll just use the dollar sign for that. And it would also become very wicked. 3 Nephi 16, the Lord talking about that Gentile nation says that it would be raised in the pride of its heart above all other nations. Do you see any of that in the United States today? We are arrogant beyond words. The things that we do, just the other day I was listening to the news, and I don't listen to it very much anymore because it makes me absolutely irritated and angry. It's really bothersome at this point, so I listen just enough. But they were talking about President Obama, and he was telling the leaders of Afghanistan that their election needed to go a particular direction or it wouldn't be acceptable to the United States. So we're telling their people how to vote now. It's just amazing the kind of things that we think that we can tell everybody else to do. And we've got our military all over the place. We're the policemen of the world. Well, who made us policemen? And my son was in the military and got out about, 2 years ago now? A year ago? He was in the Marines and was involved in their special forces. And so he was in a lot of places where we have no official presence. And he was telling me, Dad, we're in more than 30 countries. We are everywhere around the globe. So we truly have fulfilled this prophecy. And have we become wicked? Oh, yeah. So the United States then has become that nation that was prophesied, and we've become evil. What kind of sins do we see then in the country today that are around us? Well, we've got the immorality in all of its forms. One of the big things in the news right now is Proposition 8 that happened in California. And by the way, members of the church, many of them actually didn't agree with the prophet and voiced opposition to that. And that's absolutely amazing, but not surprising. Back about 70 years ago, 80 years ago, Heber J. Grant, I believe it was, had a vision. And in the vision, he was shown like the people of the world. And there's this line down the center. On one side was the world, and the other side was the church. But he was also shown that some of the members would straddle the line. They wanted to be a little bit in both worlds, part of the world and part of the church. But he was shown that over time, the line got wider and wider, and they had to stand farther and farther until they could no longer straddle. And they started jumping from side to side, back and forth, until the line got so wide they could no longer jump, and they had to choose. Well, it's choose time. The line now between the world and the church has gotten to the point where people are going to have to pick. When the prophet stands up and says, we're going to support morality, we're going to defend family, and we have members of the church that actually say, I can't agree with that. That's their choice, but they're making a pick for the world. That's a dangerous choice, and they're going to end up on the wrong side of that line when the decision comes by the Lord to cleanse His church, because that's also prophesied, that there's going to be a cleansing of the church. And He says that will take place before the world is destroyed. So that's coming up on us pretty quick. And we're going to find that we're going to have to make a decision. Now, the prophets have given us clear counsel. You listen to conference. They're not wishy-washy. They tell us what we need to be doing. And basically, what is it? It's faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, repentance, baptism, gift of the Holy Ghost, keep the commandments. Sound familiar? Not hard stuff. Be morally clean, be honest. The world is big into the immorality. Homosexuality is only one of them. All different types of all types of immorality are not wrong. Are wrong. Homosexuality is wrong. Adultery is wrong. Fornication is wrong. Pornography is wrong. Pick one. They're all not okay. And so this is something today. What other kind of sins do we have? And how many have died over the last 30 years? Millions and millions and millions. And what an abomination. If you think about that, one of the things that got the Aztec nation and the Lamanites when the Europeans arrived, one of the things that justified their destruction was that they were killing people in human sacrifice. We're doing the same thing. Except instead of having an altar, we use an operating room table. Instead of a priest, we have a doctor in a gown. Instead of a victim gathered in war, we do innocent children. Are we any better? If anything, we're worse. We know better. And yet we do something that is abominable, absolutely abominable. What else comes to mind? Dishonesty, government corruption, greed, and I'll put that right here with power because those go together. And we're going to talk about something here a little bit later. Secret combinations. It is prophesied that they will exist. We'll talk about that in a minute. Greed and power, dishonesty. And this goes in business. How many businesses are not honest? It's a real problem. And what we see today is that it's become such a difficult situation that the government now is trying to step in and save them all because there are consequences to those kind of actions. And they're going to get a lot worse before this gets better. Okay, greed, power, corruption. Yeah. And we need to mention that because there's a reason this is emphasized so much in the Book of Mormon. Pride, and one of the other ones is that there is violence. If you study, and I take just a second here, if you go back through the Scriptures and read about the peoples before the flood and why the Lord destroyed them, if you read in the Scriptures and in the Apocryphal writings and in the Pseudepigrapha, they actually give a list of the sins that brought the wrath of God down upon them. You want to hear the list? It's amazing how interesting it is. It says they were without affection. They would kill one another, even family members. They trusted in their riches. The men dressed like women and vice versa. They married outside the covenant. Many of the men apostatized and created an order of evil that imitated the church. Apostasy. They institutionalized evil. They had a perversion of piety through their secret organizations or secret combinations that brought on oaths that would use death to promote themselves. Has that ever happened here? Let's go on. Immorality, adultery, incest, all those things. They blamed others for their problems. They were involved in lots of wars. They were very violent. They had many pollutions upon the face of the land. By the way, some things that were interesting about them, they had a chemical industry. They developed a series of medicines so that women wouldn't have to have children anymore. What else did they have? They had developed weapons that could fly through the air and explode. And they had chemistry that could produce all manner of things. Anyway, any of that sound familiar? We're not so very different. We think that we somehow come up with something new. But most of the things we enjoy have actually been created technologically in the last 200 years. And we have not treated it very well. So the prophecies say that we're going to have all these things taking place. Now, they are taking place. We're at the point where they're going to reach a breakover point at which they can no longer be sustained. It's like, have you ever been down up on a cliff and you're starting to climb down the cliff, gets gradually steeper and steeper and steeper? What happens if you keep climbing down the cliff? You'll reach a point at which it's so steep you can no longer hang on and you fall. You don't know where that's going to be because up until then, it just gradually gets steeper. In political terms, they call that incrementalism. My wife and a good friend of hers went to a class, and this has been many years ago, probably 15 years ago, and it was involved on how to promote socialism in the education environment in the United States. And you know what they were told by people from the National Education Department and the National PTA? They said, we're going to have to promote it slowly or the people won't accept it. We're going to promote socialism, and guess what else they're going to promote? And this has been planned for a long, long time. Homosexuality. Says this, we're going to put this into our school curriculum in the universities and in the public schools, and we're going to do it slowly. And they said it's incremental. In ancient times, they called it Fabianism, from the time of the Greeks. Okay, which meant slow. And that's what's been happening now. Slow, slow. Otherwise you'll have a revolution. The people, if they see it all in one chunk, will see that they don't like it. If you give it to them slowly, they'll accept it until you reach the crisis point on the cliff, and at some point when things start to fall off the edge, then people realize they have a problem. At that point, you have either civil war or despotism. At this point, these are things that have happened already. Now we're to the point where things, we've been told there's going to be many wars. Okay, that has started. That's going to get a lot worse, and rumors of wars, and that's a lot worse. Like I say, just turn on the news, and you'll see what's happening. Then the prophecies tell us we're going to reach that breakaway point when a big change takes place. There's going to be a crisis followed by a crash. The crisis has already started. It started in the summer of 2007 as far as economics, because the crisis has two parts to it, two components. One is economic. The other is political. And by the way, Isaiah talks about both of them. The economic one is in Isaiah 47. The political is in Isaiah 30, if you want to read those later. And notice, when you read Isaiah, Christ specifically referred to him in the Book of Mormon at the end of 3 Nephi, and he says, great are the words of Isaiah. He says, study them. Because Isaiah saw everything and in a brilliant way wrote it down in the layers that it occurs. His prophecies usually refer to multiple time periods. Probably at least a third, and I suspect half of the book of Isaiah is about our day specifically. There's a lot of chapters in there about us, 10 and 13, 14, a lot of these talk about our time. Those two chapters address these particular issues as well as some others. They're more plain on this, but you need to study it. 47 is the economic one. 30 is the political one. Okay. If you can get other translations, I have seven different translations of the book of Isaiah. The King James is the prettiest, far and away the most beautiful to read, not the easiest. The easiest to understand is Gileadi's. Wherever you can get it. It's great. And as I've read through all the different translations of Isaiah, he honors all of them. He doesn't divert or do anything weird or something like that. But it's easier to understand. In Isaiah, when he says the word Zion, particularly Mount Zion, that's America. When he says Jerusalem, usually that is over in Palestine, or it's the house of Israel in general. Okay? Just a little bit of a key. When he talks about mountains, the word mountain, depending on the context, usually means nations. Hills mean small nations. You get the idea? You have to know that the symbolism used in ancient Israel. These are things that we don't use anymore. But once you understand those symbols, then Isaiah begins to make sense. And if you read it, you'll understand. Okay, so the economic crisis is going to come, and a political crisis is going to go with it. At 2007, in July, anybody know what happened in July? It was significant. I've been watching for this for 20 years, and nothing ever fit. Bear Stearns had two hedge funds fail. You remember that? And the next week, two more hedge funds failed in Europe. And then the next week, two more failed in America. And then two more in Germany. The first two were in Italy, and the second two were in Germany, that kind of thing. But it was one right out, and it never stopped. It kept building. That crisis that happened last year in September and October was the result of what happened in 2007. It took a year for us to get far enough down the cliff to where things began to really go, and they stepped in with a bailout. Which, by the way, went to who? Yeah. It went to their cronies. Now, we're going to get back to secret combinations in just a minute. The Book of Mormon talks about secret combinations. When Mormon abridged the writings of his people and put them together in that, and then Moroni, after his father's death, goes through ether and does his own bit of addition. And we don't have the other two-thirds of the Book of Mormon because it's sealed at this point. We'll get it. But Moroni did that also. He did more than his dad. Do you know that? We just don't have it. But when they did that, they put in there over and over and over information about secret combinations. Why? They were writing to their own people. They were living it. They knew what they were. They knew that these books would never be seen by their children or grandchildren, but not until generations later when it would be brought forth by the Gentiles and then taken to their people. Those secret combinations were in there so that we would understand. And Moroni says, I'm telling you this so you'll recognize them in your own people. He says, I see your day. You've got them. And a lot of people say, well, we don't want to talk about conspiracies. That doesn't really happen. They don't occur. And if you even say the word, they automatically dismiss you and you see the lights go out. But the reality is conspiracies do exist. And the dangerous ones are the ones that are the hardest to find because these people are smart. They've learned through the years how to hide themselves, although they're not hiding anymore. They're now pretty blunt, but they for a long time hid. Now they're pretty open about what they're doing. He said, you have them. And if they get above you, you will be very, very sorry. I'm paraphrasing. Okay? He doesn't say very, very sorry. He said it'll be really bad. Okay. So, we're going to have an economic crisis. That has already started because those funds kept failing, 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 failing. And now, We had the big thing back a year ago in September of 08, in October of 08. They pumped a couple of trillion dollars into it. And by the way, it's more than a couple trillion. 2 trillion that we know about. How many more trillions beyond that that have been put in electronically and so on? At least another 4. On top of the national debt, which is how much? 9 trillion. And what are our obligations that the government has committed itself to through mandates and entitlements? The numbers are asked, depending on who you read, it varies anywhere from another 20 to 40 trillion on top of the initial 10 or 9 or 10 or so. So you're looking at huge numbers, and that's the United States alone. So what we have then is an economic circumstance where we have at least 9 trillion just in the debt, another couple of trillion, and I'm being kind, not including the other 4 that they've already spent that they don't tell you about. These guys are deceptive. And I'm not including the other 20 to 40 or whatever it is that are included in the mandates, the unfunded requirements that we have to pay for. And that you add all that together, you end up with a debt structure in the United States that is as great as everything the world produces in a year. How much does the world produce in a year? What's the gross product of the world? About 43 to 45 trillion. We owe that much alone, the United States alone. Now, let's throw something else. This crisis is beginning with these hedge funds. It's related to something called derivatives. Derivatives are a type of fancy leveraging on a big scale. And what they've done, and Alan Greenspan, this has been 10 years or so ago or so, he stood up in a big economic meeting and he bragged about the creation of derivatives and what a wonderful thing these hedge funds were that used them and how they stabilized the world and allowed us to kind of ride out the humps and the rises and the falls and smooth everything out because it gave us liquidity. And he bragged that at that time, 10 years ago, the derivatives were, the debt structure was $80 trillion for the world. Anybody have an idea what it is now? The more realistic estimates place it at 1.4 quadrillion. That's 1,400 trillion. Now, the government says, no, it's not that high. You know what they place it at? Trying to make it sound less dangerous. 596 trillion. And that's supposed to make us feel better. Okay? So, that's what's happening now. The political crisis is in the country, we're beginning to see all kinds of special interests and people who want this and they want that and all these entitlements, all these special interest groups, as well as gangs and private entities that function outside of the government that have power. You know what NGOs are? Okay. Non-government organizations. The UN is big in this, and we have them all around the United States. Here, it's been some years back. My wife was in the Midwest. She went there for an Eagle Forum convention in St. Louis, I think it was. And they had a break for a day. I think they arrived a day earlier or so. And they went visiting. They found a national site, one of our, like a little mini national park. They have spots like that. They're not big like Zion's or something like that. They have small ones. And they went to it, and they were stunned to find when they got there that the UN flag was on top and the US flag was underneath. And come to find out, by agreement with the UN, the lands like this, and apparently then they started researching, found a lot of this. They've done this a lot. A lot of our lands have been assigned to the UN for protection under I want to say it's a heritage site, yeah. They're doing a lot of that. They went inside and actually talked to the guy in charge of the place and said, we want the flags reversed. It's the U.S. on top. This is our land. U.N. underneath. And they refused. They said, we have instructions from the executive department that this is how it's to be.
Monticello belongs to the United Nations.
There's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. So we have political problems. We have this. Now, the prophets say there's going to be a crash. The crash when it comes, Isaiah, and this is in Isaiah 30, he says it will come suddenly at an instant. Has anyone ever seen this in vision in the modern times? Absolutely. How many members of the church are that they're having dreams and visions? Most won't talk about it because they're pretty sacred. But it's real common. When it says in Joel chapter 2 at the end that, you know, your young men, old men, your servants, and your women and daughters are going to have visions, basically saying everybody. That is happening now. And President Hinckley, here, and it's been some years ago in conference, he said that that prophecy has been fulfilled. People are having dreams and visions. Are they seeing this? Oh, absolutely. And when this happens, it will happen very fast. You're not going to get any warning, and you're going to wake up, and it will be bad. The Great Depression, referring to that, J. Reuben Clark, he said, when the next depression occurs, and they just pulled out of the last one, said, when the next depression occurs, it will make the last one look like a picnic. The next one's going to be much, much, much worse. He also said it would destroy the unions. Why did he say that? It's an interesting prophecy. Because when people are starving to death, they'll work for anything. The only problem is the unions won't give it their power easily, will they? And so you're going to have problems that go with that. Okay. So we have this crash that is coming. We have the political crisis and the debt structure. We also have trade imbalance. I'm just going to mention a few things here. Okay, not too bad. We have the trade imbalance. We have commodities that are a real problem right now. Food is a big issue. Where do we stand as far as food supply for the United States? We don't have any. Now, 10 or 20 years ago, it was the policy of the United States for 100 years because they had famines from time to time. The United States was not immune to famines back in the 1800s and 1700s. There were times when you had bad crops. People went hungry. And it was the national policy to store food. And the United States had a lot of it stored. They kept about 2 years' worth at all times. And then under Clinton, they sold almost all of it. They only had about 3 months left. And then Obama sold the rest here a few months ago. We have no backup, none. If we have any problem at all, we're going to have problems. Now, what does the Lord say about food? He says there are going to be some famines. So what we've done here now is we have created for ourselves an economic crisis through the foolishness of our investing policies and our businesses, a political crisis. And the other thing that we need to mention now are the political secret combinations. And when secret combinations organize, if you go through the Book of Mormon, among the Nephites and the Jaredites, they don't start with the huddled masses rising up in indignation against their overlords who have oppressed them. That's not where secret combinations come from. Where do they go? They, from the top down, they look for power and they look for wealth. If you want to find them here, you go to the seats of power and wealth, and that's where you'll find secret combinations. So go back and look in Washington, look in London, look in France, pick a country. Look at the major centers of power. That's where you'll find the secret combinations. And look among the big business and banking institutions. That's where you'll find the same thing. Do you want to recognize how they work? There's a prophecy from Charles Evans where he said that the people would rise up in anger because the government had plundered the nation. These organizations, these evil secret organizations, had plundered the nation. Interesting wording. So when this $2 trillion that we do know about was handed out so generously, where did it go? Did they give it to people who needed jobs, who are trying to start small business, or give tax breaks or tax credits where it might actually stimulate the economy? They didn't do any of that. Nothing. The money went to who? It went to big banking and business institutions. You want to find secret combinations? You follow that money. You want to find secret combinations? You follow death. Have we ever had any leaders that had a lot of deaths associated with the rise to power? Clinton specifically comes to mind. 70 of his friends died unfortunate deaths. They committed suicide or had bad accidents or things like that. I'm 56. I can think of two friends that had something that happened. How many people have 70 of their friends do that? And if you follow the friends that did it, they were invariably involved with them in some kind of a political circumstance and then decided not to follow them anymore. And then they would die. Very stressful. And of course, you can never prove it. But that's the point. In secret combinations, you can't prove it. They're very, very good at what they do. But that's how you find secret combinations. You follow the money, you follow deaths, and you follow threats. And that's where you'll find them. Okay? Now, with all of those things together, this is what's coming up. When this economic crash hits, the prophecies say we will have political crisis and we're going to have civil war in the United States. Isaiah talks about it. The early prophets talked about it. I'll look it up. I think it's in 26, but I'll look it up to make sure. And the symbol he uses there, by the way, is Egypt. But if you go to the early brethren, Orson Hyde, Brigham Young, some of the others, they say it'll be state against state. Heard this one? City against city. Father against son. Mother against daughter. That's where that comes from, is Isaiah. And I think it's 20. I'll look it up. But I can tell you. That is going to happen here. And when it does, it'll reach the point where you can no longer move about the country safely. You're going to have to pretty well be where you are or be moving with the church, whatever the church is doing. Okay. Any questions on that before I go on? Okay, let's talk for a second about what the church is doing. In the past, when there were difficulties, when the Lord wanted to help create a righteous society in the time before the flood, He called on Enoch. What did they do with the people that He taught? They gathered them together. And they built a city of Enoch, and eventually that city became so righteous that it was translated. And we'll get back to Enoch in a minute. Okay. When Ur became so bad it was dangerous, what did He tell Abraham to do? They left. They went away. Okay. When Lehi could no longer stay in Jerusalem because the city was becoming so wicked it was dangerous, what did the Lord tell him to do with his family? They left. You getting the point? In the Book of Mormon, the first Mosiah, King Benjamin's father, they didn't live down by Zarahemla. They lived up in the highlands. Remember? He says, we went up and built this city in Nephi, and then generations later, this is a couple hundred years later, Mosiah is king, and the Lord says, you've got to take the righteous people, and we're leaving, and they left. Because the ones that stayed behind were no longer there when when they went back up. They were gone. They were wiped out by the Lamanites. Mosiah was taken away. The Lord gathers His people to places of safety, and the examples of it are numerous through the Scriptures. There's more than 40 of them, actually. And we've even had them in modern times. What happened when things went south in Missouri and Nauvoo? The church was gathered out, and we were brought out here to the west because this is a place where there could be some safety. This gathering process is a separation. And the Lord is going to use that same system again. There's going to come a time, He says He's going to cleanse His church, and He's going to gather out the righteous to places of safety. If you go to the parable of the wheat and the tares, what happens before the field is burned? It's more specific in the Doctrine and Covenants than in the New Testament. The wheat's gathered together into the garners where it is safe. Okay? Then the tares are burned. That gathering process is going to take place today. That process, Joseph Smith said, if you go to Matthew 13, where those parables are, and there's a bunch of others in there too. He says, so those were prophetic parables. It was a prophetic sequence. The parable of the net, where they cast out the net and they bring them in, and they have all these fish in there. What was the net? It's the church. But then there were angels that came along, and they pulled out the good fish, and the bad fish were done. What did they do with them? They were thrown back to be burned with the world. These are warnings by the Lord. Christ was telling us what was happening. There's going to be a separation take place. Is the church getting ready for any of this kind of thing right now? Absolutely. Absolutely. Are there any kind of big camps that might be prepared any place? The church has a lot of them. They've been buying large tracts of land in remote areas, and they call them girls' camps. But I've been to girls' camp. When you take the ladies up there and you set up their tents, if you've got 50 acres, you've got plenty. They're buying thousands. They're getting ready. The question is, are we? A lot of people say, why isn't the church more actively involved in politics? And the answer is, the threefold purpose of the church is to perfect the saints, proclaim the gospel, missionary work, and redeem the dead. It's about saving the souls of people and bringing them unto Christ. The church today, it has a responsibility of getting the gospel of Jesus Christ out to everyone that it can get it to. It cannot be politically involved, or it would destroy, it would bring down the forces of the world upon it and crush it and be unable to do what it's supposed to do. Will there ever be a political structure that will rise out of the church? Absolutely. And if you go to the book of Revelation, it talks about it. That child that is born, is the political kingdom of God. The power is already here, but we're not using it right now. That day will come, but it will be separate from the church itself. But it will be run by the priesthood. It'll be a priesthood organization under the direction of Jesus Christ. Isaiah talks about that too. He says Christ will come and he'll be our king, our judge, and our lawgiver. We do that in a political system, but we separate them. And we call that separation of powers. And by the way, there are five separations of power in the Constitution. The first three are the ones you know about. The legislative, executive, and the judicial. They're supposed to be separate. They're not functioning anymore, by the way. The judges legislate from the bench. And they've been allowed to do so. They should have been impeached 50 years ago. That should never have been tolerated. When they said that no prayer was allowed in the schools, major disaster. The founding fathers must have rolled in their graves when that lie came out and was taught. And even members of the church buy it. And that is a huge deception. We're warned that even the very elect will be deceived. And we've got members of the church who are buying into the socialist lies that are being fed to us by our government and by the current education system. Now, is that to say everybody's bad? No, there's a lot of good people. And we stand up and we're trying to teach correct principles. But it's getting harder because they're promoting these things. The other two. Okay, the first three, the ones you know about. The fourth one was the Senate. Senators were always to have been picked by the states. They were not to be popularly elected. When the original Constitution was written, the Founding Fathers said we must never have a democracy. That's why it always just makes me cringe when they talk about what a nice democratic system we have. We want to spread democracy. We don't want the world safe for democracy. Democracy is a horrible system. It invariably leads to dictatorships because it's not sustainable. The Founding Fathers warned against that specifically. They said what you want is a, anybody remember? Republic. And they actually gave us a combination. They gave us what you would refer to as a democratic republic, because the Senate was to be appointed by the states, the republic part, so that you would have a check against unbridled federal growth of power. The House was to be elected popularly by the people. That's the democratic part. So we have a say. But the Senate was to prevent the people from running amok. That's what that was for. It was supposed to, and it worked. Until we made them elected. Now we have two houses running amok. And we got rid of the check. It's gone. So they really need, we need to go back to that. We need to get rid of that amendment that made them, the Senate, popularly elected. And the fifth one was what? The right to bear arms. The right to bear arms is an integral part of the Constitution because the Founding Fathers, when they wrote that and put that in, only a few years before, had a revolution against England because it became oppressive and they used their arms to liberate themselves. And they said, if you read in the papers that explain the Constitution, and there's a bunch of them, and the Federalist papers, which also talk about that, they said the reason for the right to bear arms is if the people ever have to rise up against this government because it becomes oppressive, this is their final chance to restore their liberty. Why do you think they want to restrict the right to bear arms? They will tell you it's about hunting, and so we don't need automatic weapons. Wrong. It's precisely not about hunting, but about defense against our own government should it become oppressive. And so that's the very reason we need automatic weapons, if you have to have such a thing ever. Heaven forbid. But it looks like we may be moving in that direction. Because they have destroyed the Constitution to such an extent now that the principles upon which it was based are hardly functioning at all. Read back the Constitution. Joseph Smith said, and I went to a wonderful lecture, and this has been back in the early 70s, probably 70 or 71, and President Benson came down and spoke. He's an apostle at the time. And he quoted that prophecy from Brigham Young, and he says, I researched this very carefully, and he said what was actually said was that the Constitution would hang by a thread, and it would be saved by the elders of the church. He says that's what he believes was actually said. Now, and then he went on to make the point, if we're to save it, we have to know what it said. How many members of the church today have even read the thing or studied its history and know why all those provisions are in there? They're there for a reason, to defend our liberty. We as a church need to be prepared as members to defend the Constitution. And there's a lot of people today who bought into the socialist lie. Okay, now, that is what's prophesied, and these are the things that are going to come. This gathering process is going to take place. There's going to be a cleansing. The Lord says it will begin upon his house. Why? Because if you're going to take care of, if you have a problem on the block and your kids and your neighbor's kids and your neighbor's kids have a little gang going on, who do you correct first? Do you go to your neighbors and tell them to get their kids straight? You start with your own children. He will start with the church. And we're beginning to see that process now. We mentioned that earlier. Now, once you get to this point, a change is going to take place. This stuff now is starting to become apparent. The Constitution is now hanging by a thread. This is no longer future. It's very dangerous, and it's going to get a lot worse. We need to watch what's happening in Washington right now. It will be saved. And the prophecies actually do say that. But it's interesting, the prophecies always say the Constitution and its principles. And if you go to Isaiah chapter 2, he makes a very interesting distinction there. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and from Jerusalem the word of the Lord. Zion, once again, remember, we're talking Americas here, and this has been about 50 years ago. I'm trying to think which of the apostles it was. I want to say Spencer W. Kimball, but I need to look it up, I guess, again. He said that law going forth from Zion was the Constitution. It will be the political truth that the Lord has restored to us. Now, okay, any other comments before we go on? Okay, we're at the point where the church now is trying to get us ready. This cleansing process is just beginning and is going to pick up pace. One of the things, if I could tell you tonight, that you need to do, and if I emphasize, I want to emphasize this, is follow the prophet. Whatever you do, follow the prophet. There will be times when there will be persuasive voices that will seem to be logical, saying to go, that'll tell you to go this way or to go that way. Whatever you do, follow the prophet. The prophet will never lead you astray. And the majority of the 12. Why do I say majority of the 12? Have we ever lost an apostle? Yeah, we've even lost a member of the 12 of the First Presidency before. But the promise is that we'll never be led astray by the prophet or the majority of the 12. And the third thing to watch is the records of the church. Joseph Smith said the Lord would never allow the records of the church to fall into apostate hands. So you follow the prophet when things get iffy. If the prophet has died and they're getting ready to pick a new prophet, you go with the majority of the 12. Whoever he picks will be the right one. And you will not be deceived, because the very elect will be deceived, and it's going to sometimes look logical. But logic is not always right. Now, at this point, we're also going to have persecution. How bad will it be? Brigham Young said it will be worse than when we were in Missouri. How bad was it in Missouri? They burned our homes. They killed our men, raped our women, and killed our children. It's hard to get much worse than that. But that is what's coming. And so we need to be prepared with a testimony that is strong enough in Christ that we can withstand that. Heber C. Kimball said that you will not be able to live on borrowed light. And I'm paraphrasing. That you're going to have your own testimony. You're not going to be able to depend on someone else's. Because when this comes, if you don't know from the Holy Ghost what the truth is and are willing to follow it in spite and no matter what happens, the logical reasoning of the world will sound pretty good. And the world's lies, they've gotten good at it. They're good at their lies. And we don't want to follow them or we'll be deceived. I spent 10 years in college. And hopefully not because I was just real thick and took longer to learn. And ended up with a degree in pediatric dentistry. Got to know a lot of fine professors. But you know what? A lot of them were what my grandmother would refer to as educated fools. They knew the facts, but they didn't understand the truth. Ever learning and never coming to a knowledge of the truth. Some of them were fine, truly, and did know the truth, but a lot of them did not. And we have a world today that is filled with educated people that don't know the truth and don't want the truth because it impinges upon their lifestyle. We are told today that all the problems that we're having with storms and hurricanes and diseases and that are because we have caused global warming or we have done something wrong with our industry or our technology, and we've done some bad things. But the reality is global warming hasn't caused the problems. Might there be some? Maybe. There's a lot of disagreement as to whether it even exists. There's hundreds and hundreds of scientists who say it doesn't exist, and they have evidence to suggest the world's actually cooling. How's that for a three? But you can't get them on the news. They will not report their stuff because the politicians have an agenda, and that doesn't fit. Secret combinations again? That's exactly what's going on. There's an old Hebrew saying that the physical world mirrors the spiritual world. If things are going well spiritually, the world will be good. We'll have seed time and harvest. We'll have decent weather. We won't have earthquakes. We won't have plagues. But then it says, if we become spiritually evil, the world will fall apart. And that's exactly what is happening. The world is in rebellion, like Enoch saw in his day in the book of Abraham, when he saw our day, and he said the world was moaning and it was sad. And he says, why? And he explains, because the wickedness on its face. The things that we see happening now are not caused by global warming. They're caused by, I can't talk, they're caused by global wickedness. And until we repent, remember that thing about the things we want to teach ourselves? The reality is we don't want to talk about wickedness. We want to blame something else. And so we deny the truth and create trouble for ourselves. Okay, now, these persecutions, that's going to pick up here and is starting right now. So count on that to get a lot worse in the very near future. The Lord himself says that he will bear his own testimony. And if you read in the scriptures, he says, I'm going to send earthquakes. Says, I'll send plagues. Any of this sound familiar? Says, I'll send the seas beyond their bounds. Says, there will be famines. By the way, he relates this to hail. Terrible storms. Okay, you get the idea. Are any of these things beginning to happen? Yeah, I went to Indonesia on my mission. And it's a beautiful country and delightful people. But on the island of Sumatra, which is not where I was on Java, on the extreme western end of Sumatra, there's a group of people called the Aceh. And the Aceh are, the whole country is Muslim. There's maybe 10% Christian. And a few smattering of Hindus and Buddhists there, but most are Muslim. But that group, most of them were very friendly and nice to us. That particular group, not friendly and nice at all. They hate anything that is not Muslim, and especially Christians. Well, here, what, 5 years ago, they had one of the biggest earthquakes we've ever had recorded in our history, a 9.2, and then they said it was 9.0. Some said more, some said 9.0, but it was big, and it caused that tsunami. I always figured when you're having destructions, earthquakes and plagues and storms sounded pretty bad to me. I never thought of seas heaving themselves beyond their bounds as a big deal. But the seas did heave themselves beyond their bounds with that tsunami, and how many people did it kill? Yeah, it was a couple hundred thousand people. It killed a lot of people. Then we had that earthquake here recently in Samoa. And how many did it kill? Not 100,000. It killed a lot of people, nevertheless. And what a tragedy if they're your family. So these things are beginning to happen. The earthquakes are increasing in frequency. They doubled every 10 years, starting in about the 1920s. The number of large earthquakes kept doubling. And then starting in the 1990s, they more than doubled. They've been speeding up from that time. So we're seeing a lot of these things happening. The storms. The prophecies say the hail that will come will weigh a talent. That's about 70 pounds. And it will destroy the crops of the earth. DNC 29 talks about that. And when he destroys our crops, since we don't have any food stored, what will happen? Huge famines. We will see the time come, and people have seen this in vision, where they were shown, where they were given the opportunity between a cat, I think it was a cat and a bag of gold, and they picked the cat, because you could eat the cat. And others were told that a pound of gold would be worth less than a pound of wheat. So it's going to get bad for a while. Now, the prophets have told us to store food. I don't want you to raise your hands. How many of you stored food? How much are we supposed to store right now? 12 plus 3, 15. 3 months of what you eat, and then a year's supply of just basics. Wheat, rice, oil, sugar, powdered milk. They say long term, but if you call the welfare department, they will tell you that is a year. Yeah, because we did that. And they said, no, that is a year. Because a lot of people say that. Well, long term, and they try and... What's that? Oh, more is better, actually. And in fact, what we've done in my family, I've got a bunch of grandkids. You know, and not to mention my children, and now they're getting married, and more are getting married, and so I just keep expanding my supply because I'm figuring on feeding them all for at least a year, hopefully two if I have to. Yes? So the church is doing missionary work among Muslim nations. Yes, we're in some. Indonesia allows us to have missionaries in. I went there in 72, and we were just opening the country then. We were opening up cities. But now, we've got several thousand members. It was slow at first, but they were nice. It's a hard sell. They believe in Christ as a prophet. Trying to teach them that he was the Son of God is a jump for them. It's a major leap. Okay. So, these things are now starting to happen. We have this persecution that's beginning, and that's going to get a lot worse. This hail storm, there are going to be hailstorms. And 70 pounds, by the way, it's big. Have you ever seen what hail can do when it strikes? I lived in the Midwest, and I went to when I was in dentistry, my dental school program there. And we had some big storms there, and they would get them all the size of golf balls. It broke windows. It did all kinds of damage. But what hail does to crops is it beats them to the ground, knocks all the grain off, and then when it melts, it washes it away. It leaves you nothing. Even a windstorm or a flood, you can sometimes salvage some of what you have, not with hail. It's a way, if you want to destroy crops, that's the Cadillac of destruction. It will get rid of it. And Isaiah goes on to say that he will take these hailstorms that he will send, the Lord's going to send them, and he will level cities. What would 70 pounds falling from space do at acceleration due to gravity? What's the momentum on something like that when it hits your house? This building would not tolerate it. It would be like having missiles thrown at you. Okay, let's move on. Now, as this gets really bad, all the missionaries are going to be called home. And something else is going to happen. One thing to notice, if you go to Joseph Smith, Matthew 24, in the Pearl of Great Price, and even in Matthew 24, the Lord tells us that he doesn't come until the missionary work's gone to all these countries. Why do you think Satan tries so hard to keep the young men from going on missions? He really, really doesn't want them to go. Because this has to occur. Do you realize what a miracle it is that we have a missionary program as big as the church has today? And it's growing. We're getting into more and more countries. For a while, they're all going to be pulled home. And when that happens, when the circumstance becomes so severe, the church has to call them home from far and near, is the wording used by, I want to say Orson Hyde. Might have been part of the prep. But when they're called home, then his judgments will hit the nations in earnest. And some really bad things will happen. Now, they will go back out after Armageddon. They're called home for a while. And then wars take place. We're going to talk about those wars right now.
So I guess my point is that all the nations of the earth might not have the missionaries at the time that the missionaries are called home, but will come after.
That's right. And in fact, let me go back and I'm going to give you the thumbnail sketch real quick. Starting right now, what we're going to see in the near future is an economic and political crash and crisis and civil war. That's coming in the very near future in the United States. After that economic crash and the political crisis and the civil war sweeps across the United States, at some point the missionaries will be called home, and then there's going to be an international war. In Isaiah 10, he describes this war, and in 13. And he describes the people, this enemy coming from far away. And it comes from over the horizon. And it comes with the intent to take the land. It doesn't care about the people. And it says, as this army moves in, it will kill everyone. Have any members of the church been shown this? Yes. There's a lot of people who've seen this in dreams and in visions. And you know who they are shown as coming? China from the west. Russia from the east, and they have allies that come with them. Now, who are the biggest armies in the world? China is first. North Korea is second. Who's third? You're good. Most people don't know that. Russia is third, and there's one before the United States after Russia. And we're talking about invading them right now. Iran. They have a huge army, bigger than ours. And they on the news, they're talking about, you know, saber rattling. And when they start doing that kind of thing like we did with Iraq before we went in, I'm thinking, you cannot be serious. Is there not a brain in Washington? that you would actually do? Yeah, the answer really is no. Either that, either they're incredibly foolish or they're complicit. And I wonder if it's a little of both. Those are the four largest. And by the way, they work with each other. And we're the enemy. My wife had a chance to go to the UN, and she did some lobbying back there, and she met with the ambassador from Pakistan. And this has been right after the 9/11 thing. Because no one would talk to these guys. And so he was glad to talk to these two ladies from Utah who were there trying to promote family and protect, you know, things, family programs in the UN, which, by the way, you can never get through. But you have to try. You have to be a voice of warning and a testimony. But he said the United States is viewed by them and everyone over there as a hawk and a danger. He says, we're going to bring you down. And who's supposed to be our ally? Pakistan. He said, we're going to bring you down. He says, we're waiting for your destruction. And that's been the attitude of the world for a long time. Remember that part about being raised in the pride of our hearts above all other nations? That's how they see us, as prideful, arrogant, intrusive, putting our nose in where it has no business. And we continue to do so. And when I listen to the pundits back there in Washington, the politicians talk, they haven't learned a thing. They're continuing to do these same policies. And the results are going to be terrible. There will be an international war, China and Russia. And are we doing anything to help them out? Sure. We're sending tons of money over there. What do you think they're buying their weapons with? We're paying for it. It's really kind of us. We did the same thing with Japan before Pearl Harbor. We haven't learned anything. And before him, guess who gave them more technology? Clinton did, in exchange for money for his election. So we have leaders of our country who are committing acts that are literally treasonous, and we praise them. And what did Isaiah said? I think it's in Isaiah 5. He says we would call evil good and good evil, and that is where we're at. Yes, he did say that. So there's an international war coming. It comes after the Civil War. China and Russia invade. This war isn't very long. In the book of Revelation, if I understand it right, this is the 13-month war. There is a war longer than that that follows sometime later, and it's a 3.5-year war, which is what they call Armageddon. Okay, let's go through these for just a minute. Any questions on that before we go on? Yes, there's two of these wars. And the book of Revelation actually lays them out. There's first a 5-month war, then a 13-month war, and then a 3.5-year war, at the end of which the nations of the world are no longer able to conduct war. They are spent and destroyed. In the process of this, hundreds of millions, in fact, probably billions, because the Lord's doing some stuff too, we're going to talk about that in just a minute, will be dead. This is going to be very, very destructive. And so I want to go over this in just a little bit. So once again, where we are now, the economic and political crisis is right on top of us anytime soon. It could be this year, it could be this month, it could be in 2 years, but it's not far away. That will be followed by civil war in the United States, followed by international war and invasion. That's where we're coming up to. We need to be prepared. And people say, well, that can't happen here. It can happen here. And then some other things are going to happen. The Lord's working, doing some things while all this is happening. And I'll talk about that in a second. Yes. They're kind of related, actually, if you go through Revelation. And we ought to talk a little bit about, well, I'll try and time in a little bit, but that would take a little more time. To put a face on this time of crisis and calamity for the United States, if you try and put a face on it, look at things that have happened in the past. The Lord uses the past. In fact, Isaiah says, who is like me to use the past to use past nations to prophesy the future? I think it's Isaiah 44. I'd have to look it up. Okay? The things that have happened before will be repeated. What did President Hinckley said when he looked ahead at the times that were coming? He says, I keep thinking of Pharaoh's vision. 7 good years, 7 bad years. This process will probably be involved in a combination of 3.5 for a total of 7. That's just my guess, only because it's been mentioned so many times. And it comes up again and again in the scriptures. 3.5, 3.5, 3.5. It shows up all over the place. That's 7. And by the way, what does 7 mean in the ancient symbolism? And perfection. 7 symbolizes perfection. And 10 symbolizes wholeness. Okay? The numbers mean something. And we need to understand that when you follow these things. You go through Revelation, it is a compilation of sevens. They're all through the book. What's the Lord saying? He uses physical things to teach spiritual truth. We do it all the time in the church. When we do baptism, it's a physical activity, but it's teaching a spiritual truth. When we take the sacrament, physical activity, teaching spiritual truth. We're making covenants. He's going to use the events of the future that we're going to go through as physical events to teach and perfect us spiritually. That's the whole point of all of this. It's just building a Zion society. And whether we are a part of that or not will depend on us. We will make the choice. Okay. Now, along with this, because while we're talking about Revelation, he also says that he's going to send things from the heavens, like he talks about a mountain burning with fire. And the wording on it's rather interesting. Well, now let's go to the DNC real quick. If I can find this for you real fast. Okay, go to DNC 84. I should have had you bring your scriptures. I'm sorry. I'll read it out loud. This is 118, the very last couple of verses. He's talking about how he sends out his missionaries and how these cities of the world, the gospel is going to be warned of, and he tells them they're going to be desolated and destroyed. And we have in Wilford Woodruff's diary, he has that vision that they think John Taylor had, where he has shown the United States. And what does he see? He sees entire states empty, nobody living in them anymore. He sees Washington, D.C. empty. He sees Baltimore empty. The few people that are there are dying. He sees New York, and it burns to the ground. Get the idea? Terrible, terrible destructions in the United States. He sees mostly women walking. It's 84, the very last two, 118, 119. He sees them coming to the West because they're looking for safety, because those who have seen this in vision, they talk about that gathering. There are what they're going to have. I just broke that off. That was nice. In the 1800s, they referred to them in their visions as cities of refuge. Now people that talk about them call them tent cities, because they see them with tents. Which, by the way, in the 1800s, they also saw them with tents. They just didn't call them that. They called them cities of refuge. 118. It says, "For with you, saith the Lord Almighty, I will rend their kingdoms." He's talking about his servants that he sends out. How powerful is the priesthood? Yeah. Absolutely. And when you think about Moses, he walks in there and he's got himself a staff. Imagine that's a staff, a lot longer and a lot taller and bigger, skinnier. He goes in with the staff, but the staff wasn't the one that did it. With the power of the priesthood, he held, because Pharaoh refused to listen to him, he destroyed the most powerful nation in the world at that time. Wiped it out. Now, his own advisors told him, after this whole process got going with the plagues, after about the fourth or fifth plague, his own priests came up to him and said, "Okay, we could imitate the snake and some of that stuff, a little bit of bowl, we could turn a bowl of water to red, made it look like kind of like blood." But when he started doing bigger things, you know, they said, "We can't imitate any of this. This really is from his God. You better let him go." They told him to let the Israelites go. And what did Pharaoh say? His heart got hard. He says, "I'm not letting him go." He was very, very prideful, and he ended up having the whole country wiped out. One righteous priesthood holder is more powerful than all the armies of the earth. And if we remember that, we have nothing to fear. We have living prophets. Once again, follow the prophet, follow the prophet, follow. If that's a mantra, you keep that in mind and you will not be deceived. It goes on, "For with you, saith the Lord Almighty, I will rend their kingdoms. I will not only shake the earth," but this is interesting, "but the starry heavens shall tremble." Why do you think we have all these movies? You ever wonder why these kind of movies come out where it shows things falling, asteroids, and they hit the earth, and they say it's going to kill everyone on the planet, and blah, 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 you know, that kind of stuff. He goes on, this is 119, "For I, the Lord, have put forth my hand to exert the powers of heaven. Ye cannot see it now, yet a little while, and ye shall see it, and know that I am, and that I will come and reign with my people." He says, "I have put forth my hand." That's past tense. He's aimed some things at the earth. It's already on its way. Our astronomy is just not good enough to pick it up. But it's coming. And when it hits, it's like he says over there in Revelation. Well, I'm not going to start reading all this. So we'll end up reading a lot of it. He talks about a mountain burning with fire and so on. One hits the land, one hits the sea, it kills a third of the things and poisons a third of the water and so on. You get the idea. So that's going on as we're doing all these things. In fact, he tells us that when this war takes place in Russia, in Isaiah chapter 10, when this Assyria comes in, it will be boasting of its power, claiming that it has defeated and gathered the wealth of the nations. That's what China and Russia are going to be thinking. When they have accomplished my purposes, and this is going back to Isaiah chapter 10, he says, when they've accomplished my purposes in Zion, in Mount Zion and Jerusalem. Mount Zion is, in the Doctrine and Covenants, New Jerusalem, specifically the United States, and where it will be centered around Jerusalem. When I've accomplished my purposes in New Jerusalem, Mount Zion, and in Jerusalem, and what's his purpose? To cleanse them, to take away the wicked who do not deserve to be there. When he's done cleansing the land, he says, then I will interfere, and he describes what he does to them. And he says, I will send down hail from the heavens and so on. He says, I will wipe them out so the people will know it was me. And what does it say in 45, section 45 of the Doctrine and Covenants? He says, once these destructions are done, these evil armies are wiped out, when the wicked of the earth are destroyed, and we begin to build Zion, it says they will be afraid of it. They'll say, we cannot go up against Zion because they are terrible. And the reason they'll be terrible is because they just watched the power of God wipe out the most powerful armies on the planet. They will find out their weapons are worthless. In Isaiah 54, he says, I am the one that created the smith that makes the weapons. They can't make anything that I don't know about. And I will end them when it's my time. So, this war goes on. Once the nation is cleansed, the war ends. The only people left are those who are basically righteous. And in the United States, we're going to go back and build the New Jerusalem. Okay, let's take a break here for a second and come to the map. I'm trying not to ruin your thing here. Oh, good. Okay, now, centered here, if you follow this river up here, this is the Mississippi and this is the Missouri coming across here. Let's see if I can find my way here. Up in this area here is where Adam on Diamond is. Down here is where the New Jerusalem will be built. This is where the Garden of Eden was, as you already know. It's interesting, the Lord uses certain places and certain peoples or types or symbols to, in a repeating order throughout history. He starts the world here, and essentially it ends there. It began with a garden. That was a paradise on earth, and we're going to build a city that will be a paradise both spiritually and physically there. We're going to go back and build that. The Chinese will come in here. The Russians will come in here. The prophecies say the Chinese will get in as far as the mountains, particularly the areas of the Sierra Nevadas. The Russians are supposed to make it here to the rivers in the middle of the country before either one is stopped. We'll even see some invading armies here in the mountain areas, but not too many. They won't be successful here. They will attempt it. Will there be attacks in Utah? Oh, yeah. Now, where are these places of safety that the saints are going to be taken to? The church doesn't tell us. They just buy lots of land. Do we know where a lot of this land is? Sure. It's not a big secret. And they bought land clear up into Canada and clear down into here. There are these places all through here, and they even have them in here. Okay? Yes. In fact, how big is the land at Adam on Diamond, the church? My parents just got back from mission from over there. 3,600? So it's big. Several miles worth of land. Okay? So the church is accumulating. Now, once this area is cleansed, we will go back. Not everybody, because once the war is done, there were also going to be a series of big earthquakes. We mentioned those earlier. The book of Revelation says there will be at least 4, and depending on how you count them, maybe 5, giant earthquakes will actually change the nature of the planet. It says there that they're going to move every mountain and island. That's a big earthquake, and it happens again and again and again. When it's done, the continents will be brought back together. Let's see if I can make... Oops, went too far. Ah, the continents are going to become one giant landmass like they were in ancient times before they were divided. And you're going to have two capitals. One will be Jerusalem in this area, and the other is going to be the New Jerusalem here. By the way, the name of Jerusalem changes. We'll talk about that in a minute. This is all going to be brought back together. He says he's going to make every mountain, every mountain should be made low and every valley exalted, and the rough places made plain. Does that mean the whole planet will be flat? No. The Lord likes variety and beauty. If you do this, you still have mountains, just in new places, and valleys in new places. But you find, and we'll talk about this in a bit, that the prophecies tell us that the Dead Sea is going to be healed. Why? If you take the deep places and lift them and the mountains and drop them and smooth out the land so it's more usable over there in Palestine, the Dead Sea can drain. And now it becomes fresh water. And it says only the marshlands will still be a little salty. Okay? All right. Now, we're going to be going back at this point where the war has stopped here. By the way, peace will be established here first, but it gets bad here first. We will experience the most horrible things before anybody else does. So being in the United States, it's going to be tough for a while, and it will probably last several years. The thing to remember is even the worst storm ends, and when it's done, the rains that came and all the things that came with it, they wash the land, and then the land becomes green and fertile and beautiful. This storm will pass. And if we follow the Lord's prophet, if we're faithful to His commandments and truly become a Zion people, we will then be able to be a part of the most wonderful time in the entire history of the world. The technology, for a while, at least some of our hardware might be destroyed. But why do you think the brethren keep telling us, get an education, get an education, get an education? You get the idea. They tell us to do it. And not just the men. They want the women to get educated too. Why? Because if you destroy a country's buildings and their machines, if you have the knowledge, you can rebuild everything. It might take a little while, but not too long. We can rebuild the entire thing with the knowledge. Why do you think over in Europe, when the communists invade countries, who do you think the first people they kill in those countries are? They do the educated. They go after them. They kill them. Because they don't want anyone that can lead any kind of a revival. We need to be, anybody needs to be educated, we do. Because I've given this lecture before and I've had young people say, well, then why do I go to school if this is going to happen? And I say, precisely because that's the one thing they can't take from you. We can rebuild our buildings if we have architects, if we have plumbers and electricians, if we have computer people. If we have, you get the list, if we have arts, people that can do music and dance and all these things, we can rebuild a society very, very fast and within short order. We can have a people and a society that is Zion-centered that will be much better than anything we have now. We'll have all the good stuff we have now with none of the bad. That's how it's going to be. That's where you need to get your children and grandchildren to. And that's where I want to get my kids to. My plan is to get them through this. This is not only survivable, the results are going to be phenomenal. We just need to be righteous. Okay, any comments on that before I go on? Okay, now let's talk a little bit about, well, trying to think what to hit here. When this process takes place and we're done with the destructions here and we begin to restore peace, part of the group that's going to come help us are these Indian groups here and clear down to here. They have Christ visit them. Every major Indian group, clear up into here and over into here in Russia, the Inuit people, they have traditions of Christ visiting, the white God or the white prophet they call him, visiting their ancestors. They're all expecting his return. And they're also starting clear back in the early 1900s, the Indian peoples are expecting to help build his city. They know he's going to have a capital. They even know where it is. They don't know the exact location, but they know that they have to come up the coast. They have to come up from South America through Mexico. It says they're going to go along the coast and follow a river up to the center of this northern continent where they'll build a city. And it says there will be some, they know that there are some white people up here that will also join them to help build a city. They just don't know it's us. And if you go to 3 Nephi 20 and 21, the Lord tells us that the house of Israel will become very powerful. These Lamanite peoples here and here and down here that we generally refer to as Lamanites, they're going to become so powerful that they will be able to destroy the Gentile nations. The other group that will be given power, if you go, that's 3 Nephi 20. If you go 3 Nephi 21, the other group is the people who are inside of the covenant. There's one group outside, one side inside. That's the church. If we are righteous, brothers and sisters, we'll be given that same kind of power. We're promised it. and we'll be able to defeat all of our enemies under the direction of Christ. And then go back and build this city that'll be here. It says they're coming to build it. They're, by the way, they're already gathering the materials. They've been gathering them now for 70 years. They're anticipating this city. Do you think the church is anticipating the city too? Oh, yeah. When we go back here, I grabbed two. When we go back to the New Jerusalem, the city structure is basically a square with blocks laid out, you know, like kind of like we do now. In the center, there are two blocks. In the main one, they will have 24 temples. The city itself will have 12 gates. The 24 temples will be somehow related. So either it's, I'm not exactly sure whether it's 24 temples that are somehow connected or one big temple has 24 parts. But Joseph Smith actually explained what the 24 parts were for. They're administrative temples in addition to what we do now. They will administer the gospel and the freedom of the world from here. These temples will be very powerful. There'll be the center of the government as well as the spiritual things. The complex in the center is large. It's probably about 30 acres. That's a big complex for a series of buildings. Imagine 30 acres with one gigantic building or a series of buildings connected sitting on it. That's what this center will be. Now, once this city is built, the people live inside. Across the center this way, homes here, in this section here and here, schools and businesses in the middle. And when I say businesses, just stores and stuff. The actual like industrial stuff is on the outside. You have industrial stuff like here and here. But then around it, you have farms. And you also have forest lands that are maintained for recreation. Once it fills up, you're done. It doesn't continue to expand like Salt Lake or LA until it fills everything and you have a city that takes you 2 hours to get across because the silly thing's 100 miles long. None of that anymore. Once it fills up, then you go so far to the north, the south, the east, the west, and you build another square with a temple in the middle. The prophecies say the day will come when there will be so many temples you can see from one to the next. And the Lamanites will work with us. Who will direct this process? Christ through the church. Because some people actually said, well, the Lamanites are going to do it, and we'll just kind of help them. No! Do you think he gave the keys to the prophet, the house of Ephraim? Why do you think in ancient times, when Joseph sat down, when Joseph brought his sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, Manasseh being the older, he brought them to his father Jacob. He says, I want you to give them their blessing. And when he pulled out his hands, Manasseh's here by his right hand, because that's where Joseph put him. He's the older son, Ephraim by the left. He went like this. And Joseph said, oh, no, you made a mistake. This is the older son. He says, no. This is the son that gets the birthright, which is priesthood leadership. The church isn't going to suddenly throw that out the window. The church will continue as descendants of Joseph to lead in priesthood functions, and the rest of the tribes will help us, including the Lamanites. And we'll build these cities. Sometime at this same point, we have Adam on Diominiker. You know, I've studied the when on that really seriously and tried to figure out exactly when. It happens before we go back to build this, because this will be the capital. We have to have something happen at that meeting that allows this to then go forward. At that meeting, all the priesthood leaders in the entire history of the world, this will be right out of Lord of the Rings, mortals and immortals, okay? That's the, you know, the saying about truth is stranger than fiction? It really is. You're going to have, you'll have Peter, James, and John will be there. Of course, John's translated. You're going to have Moses there. Enoch will be there. All these people will be there. But they also tell us, if you read the writings of the current prophets, that everyone that's held keys will also be there. In Daniel, he says the meeting will be attended by millions of people. It's one huge meeting. And Adamon Diamond is a big place, but millions of people is a pretty big number. Now, I don't know if the Lord's going to stack them in the heavens or what he's going to do with that. He has the power to do whatever he wants. Or whether he, as some of the brethren have actually suggested, they might do it in sessions like we do now with conference. However it'll be, I don't know. And I'm not, no one's asked, no one's told me, and I'm not privy to this. But the meeting will take place. And what occurs at this meeting, each person with their keys must give a personal priesthood interview and account for their keys and return that authority back to Adam. And then Christ comes and he gives an accounting of the history of the world and returns everything back to Christ. And then under him, right now we function with our keys under the prophet who functions under Christ. Christ will then be the more direct part of that because he will rule personally from the earth. He will not only be the spiritual leader, which he already is, by right of the atonement, but he'll be the political leader, which he also is by right of creation. All the governments of the world right now in that we have on the earth, and we've ever had, except for a couple that I can think of, all governments have no inherent right to rule, even our own. It gains its right to rule from who? The people. It has no inherent rights. Governments don't have rights. Don't let it, no matter what they tell you, if they claim to have rights, they're lying. People have rights, which come to us from God. We share them with government, and we can take them away when the governments become oppressive. The Declaration of Independence explains that, and not that he creates it, but he simply is elucidating an eternal truth. But Christ's government is different. He has an inherent right to rule. He made this earth. It's his. He doesn't need our permission. Okay? See the difference? And that Adam on Diamond, that's what takes place. He will be recognized as the not only spiritual but political leader of the earth. And the nations, the Old Testament, it actually says that the nations of the world will be informed that he's taking over and they'll be instructed to submit to his rule. And it says those that refuse will no longer get rain. The heavens will be sealed until they do. It's not optional. This is not negotiable. Okay, so that meeting takes place. Then we go back, as I understand it, and build a new Jerusalem. Okay, so that's the, but that's really general because I don't know if that meeting takes place during this war or where it fits into all this. But somewhere in there. Okay. Did I miss anything else on that before we go on? By the way, something occurs here. We mentioned earlier that persecutions are going to get really bad, and that's starting now. Right now, it's not all that popular to be a Mormon. It's going to get a lot less popular. Okay? And that's part of the test for saints. They're going to have to decide, am I willing to stand for Christ when they really don't like me? Because a lot of people right now, their businesses depend on it. And when all of a sudden you have to leave, or your business might fail, if you don't stand for Christ, how faithful are we going to be? Okay? It's going to get really bad. When this process is done, when the Lord steps in as these invading armies are destroying the United States and he wipes them out and people realize that it is Christ and that the priesthood power that the church has is his power, all of a sudden, it will be very popular to be a Mormon. So for a while, this is what you're going to see. The membership of the church, and by the way, this is a miracle. The membership of the church started off slow and grew, and now it's just doing this number. It's going to do that number for a while. It's going to go down because a lot of saints... What's the parable of the 10 virgins say? Half of the faithful, because those 10 virgins represent the faithful members of the church. So half of a half, if you look worldwide. Because all 10 were dressed nice. They all had a lamp. They looked great. On paper, they were going to church on Sunday. They just weren't very faithful. They didn't have testimonies. They weren't committed. They didn't like it when the church said Prop 8's a good thing. You get the point? We have saints today who don't realize they're starting to put themselves in the wrong half of the 10 virgins. They need to be very careful. We need to be careful. We need to follow the prophet and stand up. We're going to lose a lot of members of the church who will simply choose, because they have one foot too far in the world, they can no longer stand with the church, they're going to fall away. When the destructions are done, the war is over, all of a sudden you're going to see this number. The membership of the church will skyrocket. By the time Christ gets here, we won't be 10 million or 5 million or 3 or whatever it is for a while. We'll be 100 or 200 million because people will come in and we'll have missionaries teaching people in groups. It won't be it will no longer have to be one of these things where you sit down and you're just thrilled to have one person to talk to and explain the plan of salvation. You'll be sitting into a room like this and they'll be talking about Jesus Christ and his atonement and the restoration and the history of the world. And what a wonderful blessing it has been as he has gone through faithfully with prophets, giving us his doctrines until we have the fullness today. They'll be teaching like that. And the membership will skyrocket because the people that will be left after the destructions are the good people who are basically seeking for truth. And are the only good people around it members of the church? Oh, no. I lived in the Midwest. There's a lot of great folks back there. I lived in the South. A ton of good folks back there. And they don't come to the truth because they don't know where to find it. And they've been deceived by their ministers who have told them how awful we are, so they don't listen. But the day will come when they will listen, when they'll see it, and you can't ignore it anymore. And at that point, this is when it gets really good. We'll be building out here, we'll have saints going back there, and you'll have two huge populations of the church, and it will begin to expand rapidly. As the nations fail, as it says in section 87 of the Doctrine and Covenants, he'll make a complete end of all nations. As they are collapsing, as these wars draw to an end, and nation after nation breaks down into civil war, as their own people realize they've been lied to by their governments, as that begins to happen, they're going to come to the church, and they're going to say, "We want what you have." And the church will begin to expand and fill the power vacuum because they'll come in and say, "We can give you correct government." Is there political truth? Absolutely. And we have it. Founding fathers died by the thousands so that we could have it. And many of us now are letting it go. We need to fight to get it back. And we can't trust the people in Washington. They're not going to give it to us. We need to stand up and speak the truth, even if it's not popular. And for a while it won't be. Sometimes the greatest enemy we have are our own leaders. And I hate to say that, but that's the truth. There's no terrorist so dangerous as a government gone bad. We're worried about Al-Qaeda. I'm here to warn you, the bigger danger will be coming from Washington. They'll be more dangerous. And that's strong. Those are strong words. But that's, you watch. And we need to be careful. Do we have good people back there? There are some. And we need to support them. And we need to stand up. We can't be silent. What have the prophets told us? As recently as President Hinckley. He said, get involved politically. Let your voice be heard. The church doesn't do it. It's doing what it's supposed to do. But they have told us that we should be doing it. We're citizens here. We need to study the Constitution and then stand up for it. And we can make a difference. And when this happens, we'll really be able to go out and teach and help spread those good, the correct government under Christ. Any comments on that? Okay, we've got 15 minutes. Are you tired? Do you want me to go over Palestine for a minute?
No.
Got a minute? Okay, that's America, and then we're going to come back and try and tie them together. Okay. Back to the world. After the war here, there will be another war, a 3.5-year war. This is the one that's referred to as Armageddon. Or Harmageddon in the Greek. The nations that will come against Israel, and you notice Satan here attacks the house of Israel in its two locations. The first war attacks the house of Israel here in America. The second one attacks the house of Israel here. The house of Israel over here is mostly the tribe of Ephraim. The house of Israel here is mostly Judah. The two main tribes from ancient times. And I'm losing my voice. My voice isn't as strong as it was when I was young. So, it gives the nations that will attack. The Old Testament describes them, names them. And guess who they are? It's these nations here. These nations here. And over here. And a group up here. Which at the time seemed kind of absurd. When it says, another name for the battle is Gog and Magog. But you have to be careful on that when you read it. Notice the context. Because the battle of Gog and Magog also refers to the battle of the end of the millennium. Okay? Part of it refers to the one before. They're types of each other. The first one's a type of the second one. The word Gog literally means like leader. Magog means the evil leader's people. So you have Gog, or the evil leader, and his people. And it turns out that the land of Magog actually is up here. There's a land that has that name. And it's in Russia. So the armies, it says they come particularly from the northeast. And we'll see then, because it's a large army, the nations described are all Muslim. At that time, there was no unity among them at all. But today, they're Muslim, with the exception of this group, which, by the way, southern Russia is Muslim. as it turns out. It says the army will have 200 million. That's a lot. It's a big army. And it says as it comes down into Israel, they will find the land before them that's beautiful and green like a water garden, and everything behind them will be destroyed. The only reason an army that size doesn't wipe out Palestine, I mean, you could fit all of Israel along the Wasatch Front. It probably would fit between Fairview and Richfield. It's not that big. And it's about that wide, about as wide as, you know, a little wider than Sanpete. I mean, it's just not that big a place. So why don't 200 million people conquer them? It's because in Israel, you have two prophets. These are members of the church, Melchizedek priesthood holders. They may be apostles. That's highly likely. And they will use the power of the priesthood to stop the army like Moses did. It says they'll call fire down from heaven and they'll do all kinds of miracles and they'll bring this huge army of 200 million to a halt. And if you were a general of 200 million people and you couldn't conquer Sanpete, wouldn't you be a little ticked? It'd be irritating. And they'll be irritated. At the end of 3.5 years, it says these two prophets will be killed. You're already familiar with this. And they'll lie in the streets of the city for 3.5 days. At the end of 3.5 days, by the way, when they kill the two prophets, they stop. They could at that point wipe everything out really easy, but they don't. They stop and they have a party. And they actually send gifts back and forth. This will be in the news. They'll be bragging, saying how we killed the prophets of the God of Israel. We have defeated him once and for all. Satan bragging through his worldly, earthly leaders. And at the end of the 3.5 days, while they're having their party, another giant earthquake. And this is where... Now let's flip back here a little bit. Oh, get to this in a minute. Temples. We'll get to that temple in a minute. Okay, let's shoot here a bit. All right. By the way, just to let you know, where the name comes from for that battle, the Battle of Armageddon, it will be centered not on Jerusalem, but in the area north of Jerusalem. This is called the Jezreel Valley. It's a valley that runs east and west, basically, roughly, in Israel, from the sea down to the Jordan River. It's very wide. It's about the biggest flat spot in Israel. Israel's pretty mountainy. You know, my parents can tell you how mountain he is. My dad was the branch president for Southern Israel when he was there for a couple of years. And they got to travel over. Mom was in charge of the music and did all kinds of things, but they got to see. And I've been over there a couple of times. It's a mountainy place, except for Jezreel. It's really pretty. It's about the only flat, pretty spot. And on the south side, there's a road area and that comes into Jezreel from the south, and there's a big, or at least was, anciently a fortress built there called Megiddo. And that's how there's been like 20 of them built there. That's whoever had control at the time, starting clear back to the time of Solomon before, that's how they controlled this area because it was key. A lot of the battles that the Egyptians and the Babylonians and the Assyrians fought were fought here on the Jezreel Valley or the Plain of Esdraelon. It has a bunch of different names. That's where that name comes from. Now let's see if I can get this to you real quick.
So that's the first thing. You got to go the other way.
Ah, thanks. Now, in Jerusalem... Here you can see the Temple Mount in the city. The valley here, coming clear down here, is the Kidron. This is the Mount of Olives. You can see the city here. Okay, and there's the Kidron. Here's the Mount of Olives here. Here's the city again. There's the Temple Mount. Here's the Mount of Olives. On this Temple Mount, eventually, when this destruction is finished, in fact, some say before the destruction, there will be a temple built. We'll talk about the temple in a second. When these three men... are resurrected after the 3.5 days, this giant earthquake occurs, they're resurrected, they ascend into heaven. And Christ comes down, this big earthquake occurs, and the Mount of Olives splits about right there. Half goes north, half goes south, and it makes a valley. Those Jews who have not been killed flee into the valley as Christ comes down. He's dressed in, not white, red. And in Isaiah, he talks about this event. And he says it's a symbol of his sacrifice for the people. He says, who could stand with me and help me to save my people? And no one could. It was only him. And he comes down, he shows them the wounds in his hands and his feet and in his side. And they say, where'd you get these? And he says, these are the wounds with which I was wounded in the household of my friends. And the Jews will realize their ancestors killed their God. and they'll repent and be converted. He destroys the army. Let's see here. Okay, this is the Dead Sea. Jerusalem sits about right there, up on this high ridge. Sits right there. He destroys the army, and the army leaves and goes north. And it says they flee to the north and the east to get away. And they go as far as they can. This is not the second coming. And they rebuild this city. And, let's see if we can go on. Oh, this is northern Israel. If we had time enough, I'd give you a little information about the land, but we don't. That was Galilee. The city, the land, big earthquake, lands change, it flattens out. They're going to rebuild the Jerusalem. In the center will be this temple complex. This is north. That's east. Mount of Olives over here. South. This is the west. Temple right there. Here you have the inner court and the altar. The temple that they build is a complex. See these walls? They're about 880 feet on a side. This is 20 acres in size. These walls here are huge. You have kitchens in the corners. The three entrances here, here, and here are tall. They're multiple stories high. The temple itself is very high. The structure is big. I mean, big like our temples, like the Salt Lake Temple. That's how big. We're going to look at the ancient temples in just a second. It's very large. In front of us, it's an altar. And the ancient altar, in fact, we'll go back and I'll show you because it gives you a rough idea of what this will look like. Maybe, do I go back? Let's see. Just like, there we go. Anciently, you've seen these pictures of Solomon's temple. Shows you a little small thing, kind of rectangular in shape and all that. That's not the way Solomon's temple was. If you read in Kings and Chronicles, Solomon's temple was huge. It was very, very tall. It was as tall as the Salt Lake Temple, at least. And magnificent. It looked probably something like this. The altar in front of the Salt Lake Temple was big. It was 15 feet square or something like that and stood 6 or 8 feet high. And you had a ramp. See the ramp over here on the edge? You didn't throw the animals up there. I mean, you couldn't do it. You walked them up. And when you burned the animals, you did it on one side of the altar. The thing was too big. And you always, by the way, sacrificed in Jerusalem. They were burned on the north side of the altar because that's where Christ would be crucified, was on the north side of the city. Okay? So the temple will be something like that. Let's do this real quick. Here's Herod's temple. Not unlike this. See the walls around the edges? You have an outer court, an inner court, and then you go into the temple. The temple will be bigger than this. And it will have multiple stories and rooms in there. We'll go back now for a minute and look at, because in Ezekiel, getting a little too happy with the buttons. He gives descriptions of this, of this temple here. It has rooms around the outside of where the Holy of Holies is and the holy place. The Jews don't know what to do with the rooms. And all these things, there are rooms everywhere, rooms, all over the place. They don't know what they're for, but they do know how it's supposed to be built. They've even collected the materials. You don't want to tell the Arabs that very much because they don't like to hear that, but they know about it. They're not happy. But teacher, call on me. I can tell you what the rooms are for. We know what you do with rooms and temples. You use them for endowments and for ceilings and all those wonderful things that our temples are supposed to be for. Why do these gates have to be so huge and all these other rooms? What do you think they're going to be doing? We'll have to have places for record keeping and all that kind of stuff. And this is a major center. They'll have other temples like this. In ancient times, let's see if I can, okay. Oops, am I going the right direction? Ooh, that's pretty. I think I'm going the wrong way. Just a minute. See, I'm learning this technology. Oh, there we go. If you look here, this is Sea of Galilee, the River Jordan running south. Right down here is the Dead Sea. Right about there is where Jerusalem was. That wasn't the only temple in the ancient world. They were allowed to build temples, repeat temples, a Solomon's temple, not as fancy, but similar, as long as you were more than 3 days away from Jerusalem. And today we know that they had one up here in what is referred to as Dan, up in this area. There was an ancient temple of the Israelites. And there was one to the south as well. And if you go here, well, this isn't going to show it. Oops. Will it show it? Not really. If you were to follow this down past the Gulf of Aqaba into northwestern Saudi Arabia, they have found a temple, a Hebrew temple, that dates to the time of Lehi, that was built. Had a baptismal font, by the way. Do the Jews have, did they have baptism back then? Yeah, they did. That font wasn't that big because it needed water to wash the altar. They knew what baptism was. When John the Baptist comes along and they came down because they were mad at John the Baptist, he's down there baptizing people in the River Jordan. They didn't ask him what he was doing. What did they ask? By what authority are you doing it? They knew what it was. They still have baptism today. They just don't call it baptism. They call it mikvah. They do them. They do ritual washing. They don't understand the meaning, but we'll fill them in. We'll give them all that stuff. Now, so we're going to go back. This is going to occur. That battle takes place. When that occurs, this brings peace to the world. The city of Jerusalem is now renamed. It's rebuilt with a temple at its center. The part of the city immediately around the temple will become a priest complex where those who run the temple live. They'll live right around it. And then you go out into the tribes, will get their assignments. In this process, well, we'll get to that in a second. The city itself is renamed. It's called no longer Jerusalem, but Jehovah Shammah, which means God is with us. And this is where the prophecy comes into play, that people will see that God actually is with Israel in Palestine and in America. And it says they will actually go, says they'll take the Jews and grab the hem of their robe and say, please let me go with you. God is with you and I want to be there. It will be popular to be a member of the church. And the Jews will be converted and join at this point, almost in mass. Okay? Now, we have peace in the world. At the same time, let's see, I don't know if I can go in the right direction or not. Oops, wrong direction. Coming somewhere from the north will be the 10 tribes. As we bring all of these, and they're going to come from somewhere up in the north, they come back to us here at the New Jerusalem. Section 133 talks about this. And they will come back bearing their treasures and their genealogies. They come here first. Why? Because we have the priesthood keys. They need to come here to get their work done for their dead. They come here to get the blessings of the temple through the priesthood. Then some will wish to stay. Those who don't want to stay will go back here when this battle is done. And they will then have an inheritance there as well. And Israel will have these two big spots where we will live. We'll also speak a new language then. We'll no longer speak English. We will speak, I know, we will speak the Adamic tongue. And that will become the language of the planet. And it'll be back like it was, remember all things restored? Like it was before the Tower of Babel. We'll get ourselves back to one language. And it's a perfect language. We probably won't use our alphabet anymore. We'll use the ancient alphabet, which was both symbolic and phonetic. It was a much more powerful language than English. Not that English isn't bad. English is very descriptive, has a lot to recommend it. But the Adamic language was 10 times more powerful than ours. I'm being facetious here. Well, not facetious. I'm being symbolic. It's a lot more, whatever that was. So, okay, that will occur. Then, after all of that, Christ comes. And he burns the earth. The righteous are literally picked up, it says, caught up. The earth is burned. They're set back down. And we have 1,000 years of righteousness. And the earth becomes a terrestrial world. It'll be a paradise. And at the end of that, it starts all over again. Any questions? That was kind of fast. We went through it and just hit a lot of stuff. We didn't do too much detail on it. But that gives you an idea. Okay, so in summary, where we are now, there's a huge crash coming, political, economic crisis, civil war, invasion of the United States, after which the invaders are destroyed. The 10 tribes are going to come back, Adam on Diamond, we go back and build a new Jerusalem. Big battle over in Palestine, Armageddon, and then the world's put back together and Christ comes. San Pete, you know those places of gathering I was telling you about? San Pete will probably be one of them. But it will only be for the righteous. Those who are not righteous in San Pete will not be allowed to stay. And the Lord will take care of that. The church won't do that. Remember that cleansing process I told you about? That will occur. And it's going to be pretty hard. If I, once again, coming back to what I said earlier, the best counsel I can give you tonight is follow the prophet. And you will not be deceived. And the majority of the 12. Okay? No matter what happens, no matter how logical the alternatives sound, you follow the prophet, the majority of 12, and you will be fine. Now, we've been given some basic things that you can do personally. Get out of debt. If you have debts, well, then reduce them as much as you can. Get food. Let me emphasize that again. Food. Get food. Store it. They've been telling us now for like 100 years, and people say, well, they've told us for so long that it can't possibly really be true. It's going to be true. And now it's, you know, it's kind of like kit time. Yeah, we're getting up to where it's going to matter. If you don't have food, your children will starve and you'll watch them starve. The church does not have enough food to feed everybody. The members of the church who save food don't have enough food to feed everybody. The Lord himself will cause the separation. And those who have not done what they've asked will have some very, very horrible things happen. Get your food. You can still get it, but you better move quick. Do not delay if you don't have it. About 13 months. If, and this is a big if, as I read that and think of it, I think the 13-month war is the one against the United States. The 3.5-year one is against Palestine. And that's, you're getting, big disclaimer here, everything tonight, my opinion on this stuff, I would encourage you to go home and read this yourself. And it's everywhere in the Scriptures. The Book of Mormon is filled with this. The New Testament, the Doctrine and Covenants, Pearl of Great Price, Old Testament. By the way, the Old Testament's a treasure. It's loaded with this stuff. Book of Isaiah is phenomenal. Read this for yourself. Don't take my word. Read this for yourself and study it out. You're getting my feelings and thoughts on this. These things are happening. And it's in the Scriptures. A lot of people say the last day stuff, they won't talk about it. Say it's a mystery. It's not a mystery. The Lord has told us so we won't be afraid. I didn't use the analogy, but I will real quick. It's the old spook alley analogy. The first time through, if it's a good spook alley, it'll really scare you. Fifth time through, you're not frightened anymore because you know what it is. You know everything. There's no reason for us as members of the church to be afraid. We know. If you read through this, if I took just the prophecies of the last days out of the Scriptures and not even the teachings of the modern prophets, and there's even more in there, and just put just the stuff from the Scriptures, it would make a really big book. The Lord has not left us in ignorance. But a lot of us have chosen to remain ignorant. We just don't want to read it, and we don't want to hear about it. And that's just plain foolish. We need to understand so that we're not frightened and so that our kids are not frightened. If they know, they will be able to handle this too. The first war in the Gulf fit the description eerily so. I mean, it was really weird how close it matched everything. But aside from that, in the United States, when the prophecies talk about it, the modern prophets and Isaiah describe it, they say state against state, city against... It's not going to be like the Civil War back in the 1860s, where it was North against South. This will be everybody against everybody, literally. And Joseph Smith said, if this country does not make right the wrongs they did to the saints in Missouri, and they never have, if they don't make them wrong, make it right, he says, they will have mobs until they'll be sick of it. And that's what we'll see. It'll be total collapse. John Taylor, in that vision that we think was his, he sees the people in Washington completely gone. Another vision of one of the early saints back in the 1850s or 40s, he saw this and he said he saw Washington, D.C. and the people were literally being blown out of it. And I think it was a figurative thing. The things had become so unstable, they could no longer stay. They had to leave and the government collapses. We'll see an essential collapse of the government. And who's going to rebuild that? Well, if we're going to restore peace, it's going to be based on constitutional principles because those came from Christ in the first place. If you read the Founding Fathers, George Washington, James Madison, Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, if you read, and that's just a tiny bit of the list, these were good men. They understood where this was coming from. People to this day say, well, they didn't believe in Christ. And they were really all just deists and all that. They're liars. These people did understand these things. You know, it burns me when they try to rewrite history to match their evil desires. And that's exactly what they're doing. But that's what that war will be. It'll be everybody against everybody. It'll reach a point where the only place it'll be safe will be where the saints are who are following the prophet. And that's why these cities of refuge that will be these places of safety the church is going to establish, they will become the center of the rebuilding process and will begin to reestablish the constitutional principles of correct government. And we'll get rid of this. This government should only be 10% of the size it currently is. There's no reason for it to be this big. It was never meant to be this way. The Founding Fathers will be absolutely sick if they see what a socialist republic we've made of it. I correct that. Socialist democracy. Because a republic, you can't do this with. Democracy, easy. Because you use bribery to tell the people we're going to help you, But all the while, you don't care about the people. All these programs are supposed to help us are designed for their own power and benefit. And if you really look at it, that's exactly what it ends up being. They're stepping, and all these programs are helping us are really stepping on the widows and the poor and all that. It doesn't help those people at all. They claim they're helping them. It's not help. But does that answer your question? Any other?
How many laws or pages of laws do we have now?
Oh, the tax code alone is like a million pages. Who can obey such a law? They've got it written now. No matter what you do, they can find something you're doing wrong. If they want to, they can arrest you and find a law that you violated. Literally, they've created a monster. And it's not because they wanted to help us. Never buy that line. Yes.
To make you marry.
Right. And that's right. And those who've seen in vision say that one of the major attacks actually occurs on a holiday in harvest time or winter, which is Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Thanksgiving.
Narrows it down. Let me add Christmas to the two. But that's, yes. And there's a reason that's in there, because that seems to be when it happens. There's precedent for that, by the way. Precedent for that. Nations often will use a surprise, nothing like a good holiday to catch people off guard.
Any more ideas on the cleansing?
Cleansings, whenever the Lord does a division, He usually sets up a circumstance where we pick for ourselves. In the pre-earth council, we had a discussion about agency, and there was a war in heaven. And we had to choose either Christ or Satan. There were no fence sitters, as they always say. Well, it was a fence sitter. That's why they were this or that. That's not the case. If you have a body, you chose Christ. Now, you may not have been valiant, but you chose Christ. That's how you got here. Okay? You're going to go to the celestial kingdom? What is the doorway to the kingdom? It's Christ with a commitment. We have to make a commitment. The commitment is, and we make this decision, baptism. You have to be baptized. It's not optional. If you want to go to the celestial kingdom, you have to be baptized. Then we hope you keep all the commandments, or it's not enough. But we make that decision. Circumstances are developing even as we speak, where the world is becoming more wicked and is promoting and pushing its evil. One of the things in the Book of Mormon, the Lord says secret combinations are the greatest evil in the world. Why does He say such a thing? There's some pretty bad evils around. Because it's the organized imposition of evil on an entire society. That's why they're so bad. They're functioning now in this country and the entire world. The organized imposition of laws that promote homosexuality, that make it legal and okay to be adulterous and fornicate, that make it okay to be dishonest in your business practices, that make it okay to steal from the public by getting help that you don't deserve and telling us we have to pay for it. You get the idea? That's secret combination stuff. It's functioning. It's alive and well in the United States government and in the economic system of the world. They're doing all these things. So we're going to have to pick. And members are going to have to pick, too. Members of the church will have to pick in this process. And some won't want to choose the church, because the church is going to, in the very near future, you watch. Hate crimes, is that about hate? Oh, no. It has nothing to do with hate. It's all about power. They want to silence their opposition. And the church, the new hate crimes law just passed. Another one. Like we needed one more. Was it? And they're dangerous as all get out. They can arrest people who promote an idea that they think is dangerous to people that they're protecting. That sounds like apostles and prophets. When they start arresting leaders of the church, it's duck. Yeah, when the missionaries come home, you duck. Those are key things and things to watch for the government. If the government ever tries to suppress religious freedom and freedom of speech or take away your guns, those two things, they've lost their legitimacy. They practically don't have any now. Yeah. And he gave a wonderful talk on freedom of speech and religious freedom. And what was the reaction on a talk that was very basic on our freedoms and liberties? People don't like it. Yeah. And that's an apostle speaking basic truth. There are little things happening everywhere that portend what's coming. Is that what you're talking about? And yeah, it's, if you look in Europe and Asia, my focus today was pretty much the United States and a little bit in Palestine, but the same thing is happening everywhere. Other countries will not be treated as badly as the United States is going to be treated in this destructive process. In the U.S., hundreds of millions are going to die. I'm pretty confident of that. It's going to be really bad. Why is it so bad here, whereas China has a government that's probably worse than our own? That's right. There's a big difference. What did Lehi say? If you come here, and that promise and curse applies only to the Americas, North and South. And by the way, these people down here better be watching out because it applies to them too. But we're going to get it first because this is the nation, the Gentile nation, chosen to restore the truth that had Christian principles as our foundation. And have. Not in ignorance, like Mormon says. We didn't drift away from the truth. We knowingly rebelled. We've done the same thing, and we will pay a terrible price. So is it happening elsewhere? Absolutely. But watch here first, because this is where it's going to hit first. The Lord's going to cleanse His own house. It'll be the church, and then the nation. And when it hits, it will hit with a vengeance. And Isaiah says it'll be suddenly, at an instant, people who've seen this, members of the church, faithful members who've seen this, say it happens in a couple of days. Isaiah says, as in a day in 47. Says you go to bed and you wake up and everything is falling apart. The power is not working. Your finances are in ruin. I mean, it's that fast. The stuff that's been happening over the last 2 years since July of 07, that's just the collapse. It's been slowly building. And the news now saying how wonderful everything is and it's going to get better? How is it going to get better? The fundamentals are awful. It's not going to get better. They're going to think it's going to get better, or they're going to think they're in control. They're not in control. These secret combination people and the wicked who are not even part of that, who are just thinking they're doing their own thing, they're not in control of this process. The Lord's got a real surprise for them. In fact, one of the things that Isaiah uses to prophesy our day is what happened at the time of Hezekiah at about 710, 715 BC when Assyria attacked Israel. They took all the small towns and got cleared and surrounded the capital of Jerusalem. And he was mocking the Lord. And Hezekiah goes to Isaiah and he says, what am I going to do with this? And Isaiah says, let me go to the Lord and ask. And the Lord says, don't worry. They won't even shoot an arrow over the wall. And he says, and then he sends a message back to the king of Assyria. I think his name was Sennacherib or Sennacherib, depending how you pronounce it. I'm not real an expert on ancient Arabic or Aramaic or whatever. But he said, I know where you live. You know where that saying comes from? It comes out of the Bible. It says, I know where you live. And he says, I will put a bit in your mouth. He insults him. He insults the king, the emperor of Assyria, which at that time had been ruling for 300 years, a little more. They were the most powerful military nation around. He says, I put a bit in your mouth like a horse. He says, I'm going to take you back where you came from and you'll die in your own land. And the next day he woke up and ate, it was 100,000 or something. Depends on how you read it. Hebrew numbers are a little hard because they use letters. And some of the letters have double meanings. But it was like 100,000 of their soldiers of the Assyrian army were dead, killed by an angel during the night. Can the Lord wipe out an army? Not a problem. And the king of Assyria, Sennacherib or Sennacherib, took his army and he went home where two of his own sons killed him while he worshipped in his temple. And the Lord did exactly what He said. And by the way, that's the type for us. When this attack takes place, it will look like we've lost everything and there is no hope. The armies will come in and it'll appear like we cannot recover. And then the Lord, like He did with ancient Jerusalem, will step in and save Israel. Now that means we're worthy enough to be saved. So we better be following the prophet. So there's something to save. The difference between poor Mormon and his people is that we have a lot of good people here. We have many who have not turned away from the truth. And that's why the Lord will help us. Yeah. The church is aware. When Mom and Dad were over in Israel, the church has a information gathering system that would make the CIA proud. Except that we're not mean. Okay? They would be sitting, it seems like you told me, that you would get a notification saying that students can't go out for the next 2 days. And sure enough, there'd be a bombing the next day. They always seem to know. They had their pulse on it, and I don't know how they do it, but they're aware. That too. The church is in good hands. And when I hear apostates, and some of them think they're well-meaning, keep your distance. Have nothing to do with apostasy. No matter how well-meaning it sounds, it goes nowhere except to damnation. The church knows what it is doing. And President Monson, he is who is supposed to be there. You look at the apostles we have now, you will not find a better group of men in one spot doing anything. They know what they're doing. I wish the rest of the world was so well led. You know who we need for president right now? Elder Oaks. Slap my mouth. An apostle. We need an apostle. We need a prophet president, like the Nephites when they had prophet kings.
Is there a prophecy out that there will be a Mormon president? I've heard that over and over, but I can't find it anywhere.
No, not that I know of. And I've read everything to get my hands on, and some of it's garbage. Some of it's true. Your basic, by the way, when you're studying last days, these are your standards, the scriptures. If it ever contradicts the scriptures, it's not true. If it contradicts the teachings of the prophets, the modern prophets, it's not true. Okay? If it doesn't contradict them, that doesn't make it true. It only means it might be true. We need to close. Some of you probably want to go. I forgot to mention one thing about preparation. Temples. In the last couple of conferences, they have pushed temple work, temple work, temple work. In fact, the last conference, they kept saying temple worship, which is a really neat way to put that. Okay. Thank you for coming.